This is the Breaker.News podcast for August 26th, 2018. Welcome. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, regular features like the Is It Just Me commentary, Around the Rim, headlines about the Pacific Rim, Cascadia Calling, headlines about the Pacific Northwest. The Big Deal feature. I catch up with Dan Russell, who hosted Sports Talk for 3 decades on Vancouver Radio. He is the newest inductee to the Nat Bailey Stadium Broadcast and Journalism Hall of Fame. And I will award a virtual Nanaimo bar to those who deserve it. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or is silly season the gift that just keeps on giving? First, the wax. The conservative-leading Justice Center for Constitutional Freedoms is representing esthetician Sheila Poyer, who is accused in a complaint to the BC Human Rights Tribunal for selling Brazilian waxes, but not manzillions or brozillions. The transgendered woman who complained wants $2,500 and an apology because she was denied the service. Poyer's lawyer says she didn't have the training or the tools to perform a manzillion on the prospective customer. A hearing is scheduled for 2 days in early October, but will it go anywhere? The procedure is for cosmetic, not medical reasons, and what's more, the spa is a private company. Similar to the Just Ladies Fitness in Burnaby that was accused of discriminating against a man who said he wanted to join the women's only fitness center. Gordon Stops' complaint backfired. In 2007, he was ordered to pay $3,000 for misbehavior. Now for the Max. Conservative leadership runner-up Max Bernier's bombshell departure from the party last week is a classic case of going outside the tent to piss at the tent. Politicians would always rather that their party members who have a beef with the party stay inside the tent and do their peeing from inside to the outside. Bernier is still sore from losing to Andrew Scheer in the leadership race and was growing impatient with Scheer with just over a year until the federal election. Bernier doesn't have much time to put together a party and do fundraising, much less find candidates to run in the 338 ridings across the country. Good luck. What do you think? Bob at TheBreaker.News. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the South China Morning Post, Liu Zhen reports, 7 Chinese defense firms in world's top 20, international think tank says. The International Institute for Strategic Studies said the 7 state-owned Chinese defense firms each had more than $5 billion U.S. dollars in revenue in 2016, thanks largely to China's massive and ever-rising military spending. The leader of the Chinese pack is China South Industries Group, which came in at 5th with an estimated revenue of about $22 billion U.S. dollars in arms sales in 2016. About half the revenue of the world's biggest manufacturer, Lockheed Martin. Aviation Industry Corporation of China was 7th overall, and China North Industries Group Corporation, which makes tanks, guns, and rockets, was 9th. Others in the top 20 include China Aerospace Science and Industry Corporation, China Shipbuilding Industry Corporation, China Electronics Technology Group Corporation, and China Aerospace Science and Technology Corporation. On ABC News Australia, Nick Sass reports, Prime Minister Scott Morrison and Cronulla, the Shire's locals get behind their man in the top job. For the people of Cronulla, and one resident in particular, things change forever at 6 p.m. on August 24th in the Shire, the colloquial term for the Sutherland Shire. Their boy, the Cronulla Sharks' number one ticket holder, officially became the 30th Prime Minister of Australia, succeeding Malcolm Turnbull, who was overthrown by his caucus. Sharks supporter and local electrician supervisor Derek Field said he hoped that Mr. Morrison would bring back unity to the Liberal Party. Small business owner Craig Bulmer said Australian politics had become a, quote, laughingstock, and Australian politics was as bad as the U.S. and Donald Trump. And in the Breaker.News, we reported that NDP donor accused of bilking a union is poised to return to Mexico thanks to proportional representation. A darling of the NDP's biggest 2017 backer, the United Steelworkers Union, is heading home to Mexico to take one of the 32 Senate seats allotted via proportional representation. Napoleon Gomez Urrutia was on a list of at-large nominees submitted by the July 1st presidential election winner Andre Manuel Lopez Obrador of the left-wing National Regeneration Movement, or Morena. Gomez fled to Vancouver in 2006 and led the Los Mineros Union in exile after being accused by Mexican authorities of embezzling $55 million from union members. A Mexican court threw out an extradition application in 2014. The same year, Gomez became a Canadian citizen. He was wanted for embezzling $55 million U.S. from the Los Mineros Union that he heads. A civil tribunal that oversees labor disputes said earlier this year that union members should be compensated. British Columbians will decide whether to end first-past-the-post elections and adopt proportional representation when they vote in a mail-in ballot this fall. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest. In the Bellingham Herald, Dave Gallagher reports, Northwest homes continue to appreciate as affordability worsens. Here's where Whatcom stands. Home appreciation rose 13.1% in the second quarter compared to a year ago for the Bellingham metro area, according to a new report from the Federal Housing Finance Agency. That's the eighth highest year-over-year increase among the 245 metro areas listed for that time period. Several Pacific Northwest metro areas were in the top 10 for year-over-year home appreciation increases. Boise, Idaho ranked second on the list with a 15.6% increase. Tacoma was third at 14.9%, followed by Bremerton, Seattle, and Wenatchee. Retirees, in particular, are having trouble trading down. They have no problem selling their Seattle house, but can't find anything to buy, so they continue to look outside of Seattle to places like Skagit and Whatcom counties. In the Oregonian, Ted Sickinger reports, Oregon's $150 million lottery winner prompts email scam. Salem resident Stephen Nickel won the Powerball jackpot in June, making him one of the biggest ever lottery winners in Oregon. Last week, emails purporting to be from Nickel began landing in local inboxes, offering to share his good fortune by donating $1 million to five or six lucky individuals. The message was a grammatical catastrophe, and the return address was in Japan. Meanwhile, the Register Guard reports that Lauren Card, who survived the deadly Route 91 Country Music Festival mass shooting in Las Vegas, has been sworn in as a Springfield, Oregon police officer. She said she was inspired to become a cop because of the heroics of Las Vegas police on that awful night last October. And in the Victoria Times Colonist, Carla Wilson reports, vehicle traffic hits record levels on BC ferries. BC ferries vehicle numbers hit a record and passenger figures were the highest in two decades during the first 3 months of the company's fiscal year. However, net earnings slid to $6 million for the 3 months ending June 30th from $17.3 million during the same period last year. The earnings drop is due to the 15% fare reductions that kicked in April 1st on all routes other than the Metro Vancouver to Vancouver Island sailings. Fares held steady on the major routes to and from Vancouver Island. As well, the BC seniors age 65 and older discount on passenger fares was reinstituted in April. That means the passenger portion of a fare is free for seniors between Monday and Thursday on most routes. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. For 30 years, Dan Russell informed and entertained British Columbia sports fans on his nightly Sports Talk radio show, the longest-running show of its type on Canadian radio. With a nod to Vin Scully, Russell signed on every night with his familiar pleasant good evening, and he gave listeners a sportscast, commentary, live interviews, and an open line for them to call in and discuss the scores and the stories of the day. This was before sports radio and sports TV exploded, before the internet, before social media.
The first sports talk broadcast was October 15, 1984.
CJOR Sports presents Sports Talk with Dan Russell. Sports Talk, an in-depth review of today's sports action, plus a chance for you to voice your opinion. Call 731-9192. That's 731-9192. Now, here's Dan Russell.
And a pleasant good evening. Welcome to our first of what we hope is many editions of Sports Talk. Open line sports programs, very popular in a lot of cities, and a little bit untried, I think, in Vancouver. We're hoping Sports Talk will be a success, and the reason we think it will be a success is that it is being held at a time which I think is very conducive to sports open line shows.
Dan Russell was inducted to the Nat Bailey Stadium Broadcast and Journalism Hall of Fame on August 25th. I caught up with him to discuss his memories and his legacy.
It was a surprise to me because I've been out of the game a little bit for about 3 or 4 years, and they happened to phone me a few months ago and said that they were wanting to honor me, and I thought, wow, okay. I did a lot of stuff with the Vancouver Canadiens back in the early 80s, so they were a big part of my growing years in terms of broadcasts. But, you know, you're out of sight, you're out of mind, and I thought nothing of it until they phoned, and then I thought, wow, isn't that nice?
What is your favorite memory of Nat Bailey Stadium, of being a broadcaster at Nat Bailey Stadium?
Am I allowed to say the media room, where we spent long shifts after games? You have to understand, I was pretty young. I was in my very early 20s, and I had a media pass, and for the Canucks, the Lions, the Canadians, the Whitecaps, every event that was on, I would be there. So I was just so thrilled to be a part of the local sports media, trying to get my feet wet. And so I would take on anything that would be thrown my way. A couple of things that were thrown my way, Bob, CJOR was my first radio home. There was a time where Jim Pattison owned the baseball team and obviously owned CJOR. I was coordinating the operators, the board operators at that time. And 1 year, the games were on an FM station, a news station that has long since departed, called CKO. Well, because the same owner of the baseball team and the radio station wanted their games on, they asked me if I'd coordinate all that. So I hired the board operators and I did some of it myself. And so I got really involved that way. And then CJOR had them. And then I was doing an afternoon sports run. And before you know it, the radio station, I guess, asked me to be the host of the game. So I would do my afternoon sports. I would race out there to do my 6 o'clock major from the press box during batting practice, often with a ball fouled back right into our plexiglass booth that would scare the daylights out of me. And then I would do the pregame show from the dugout, the postgame show from the dugout, and then we'd put on those long sessions in the media room. And I was young and had a lot of fun. And actually, this past week has brought up a lot of those memories, and I miss those days.
Your career took you from the basement of the Grosvenor Hotel, where CGOR's studios were, to more than 20 stories up above ground at CKNW, also at CKWX, CFMI, MyCityRadio.com, Team 1040, and CIL, throughout the dial and throughout different ages of technology. We're now in a different age of technology, the digital age, the social media age. Can you reflect on what happened with sports media, the evolution of sports media as you saw it? You had a front row seat to it.
Wow, you just brought up a memory that I never have thought of for a long time, and that is, I might be the last guy who did play-by-play on a black and white hockey telecast, and that would have been in the very late 70s. In those days, I was at BCIT, and I was volunteering the heck out of myself, and I remember I'd be Thursday night, I'd be at Carisdale Arena doing a junior game, Friday at the North Shore or North Vancouver Rec Center, Saturday in Abbotsford, Sunday at Queen's Park Arena. I had that every week. But on the Friday night games out at North Van Rec Center, they had the old truck there, and it was the last of the black and white. So anyway, the media sure has changed. You fast forward from the black and white to how we're, you know, conversing today on a podcast and everything that's been in between. In some ways, it's been absolutely marvelous, I would say in most ways. But in another way, for me personally, I would say that the 30 years of sports talk that I did on the radio, I probably had to reinvent myself three times, I would say, two, three times for sure, because of the technology. And by the end of the 30 years, I would say that that was probably the biggest reason I felt like it was time to move on. People, you know, when they first heard my show back in the early 80s, we were the only show in town. If you wanted to have a take on sports, your choices were to either phone my show or write a letter to the newspaper. That was it. You really had no other choice to voice your opinion. So our phone lines were jammed every single night, and it was an awful lot of fun doing that. You know, cell phones became a thing. But then, you know, we were on the air before there was really widespread cell phones, widespread texting. Well, there was no texting. Emails were new. The fax machine was pretty new. TSN had just gone on the air. There were so many things that, you know, now people have a smartphone, and by the end of sports talk, you know, the patience level of callers getting on and participating in a topic had really waned. And I believe that was because there was just so many other choices in the technology, which is great, but it probably has done a lot to either kill or severely hurt the talk radio that I was used to.
During the era of sports talk, it was an era of great change. What were the one or two highlights for you, the story arcs that took on a life of their own on sports talk?
I mean, the NBA team, and we were first to break that story of them coming. And it was, we were in New York City, and I remember with Jerry Colangelo Sr. in his hotel room, him telling us that, Vancouver is going to come in. And this was 4 months before it happened. And we were kind of surprised. And the biggest reason we were surprised was, and certainly me, because I took callers every night, there was no real hunger for an NBA franchise to even come to Vancouver. I would say Major League Baseball was a sport. And you recall the BC Place Stadium was built with that in mind, that one day it might attract a Major League Baseball team. Certainly there was no hunger for that. The same, I would say, for the Indy race and the golf tournament. I mean, they were big events. They came, they went. And I would say that the reason the Grizzlies, I mean, they could have made it here, but the Canadian dollar was just the poorest timing of all for that franchise. And they never were managed very well, and they didn't get a Steve Nash or a Yao Ming. And I say to this day, if they had one of them, they'd still be here. If they had both of them, they'd be a huge franchise. But they never got either of them, and they never really got a franchise player of any sort. So that kind of waned. But you're right. A lot of things changed. Like you said, the AAA team went from a AAA to a single A. The Whitecaps went from North American soccer to virtually nothing and then restarted again. Now it's MLS. So I guess that's the evolution of sports, isn't it, Stu?
It was, from a listener standpoint, one of your greatest shows, if not the greatest show. But on the other side of the mic, what was it like for you after Game 7 in 1994? How does that show rank among all the shows you did over 30 years?
Yeah, that has to be, you're right, Bob, that has to be the most memorable one. I mean, the whole run, we were lucky. I mean, I was extremely fortunate to be able to go to every single game during that playoff run, home and away, weekdays and weekends, and we had extended our broadcast a few times. We were on their entire journey, so Calgary in the first round, and then Dallas, and then Toronto, and then the New York Rangers, and it just kept building and building and building. And again, there were a couple of other shows in the marketplace, but nothing like ours at that time. And it became the rallying point as the Canucks hit their, you know, their pinnacle of success in their NHL history, still to this day, their pinnacle of success. So you could feel the entire province, and we were on a network of stations around the province, you could feel that everybody was watching the games, and if they weren't going to a local establishment afterwards, they were they were definitely gathering around the radio to hear our show. Prior to that game, I'd seen all these police officers on horses ringing around Madison Square Garden, thinking, oh boy, they may have some trouble here tonight, or they're expecting it. If they win or don't win, I don't know. But then we raced down to our studios, which was at Westwood One, right by the David Letterman studios. And I get in there and I put on the headset in getting ready for my 10 o'clock show. And I'm hearing that Vancouver's having a riot. I went, whoa, what? And so suddenly we changed from Canucks coverage. We're on the air now, and it's complete riot coverage for like 3 hours. I have Brooke Ward, I have Steve Snellgrove, I have Janet Brown. I've got people all over the place doing reports from Vancouver. It was 3 hours later that we started dissecting Game 7 of the Canucks, and we did that for about 3 hours. And I remember we signed off at 5 a.m. and Vancouver time, which was 8 in the morning. And two quick things about that. Number one, the Canucks plane had already landed back at YVR. That's how long we were on the air for. They had already flown back from New York. I remember getting a call around 5:15 from somebody who said they've been trying since 11 o'clock that night to get in and get on and talk about the Canucks. And then at 8 a.m. Eastern time, 5 a.m. Pacific, I walked out on the strip. Bright, bright, sunny day, probably 33 degrees in New York, and it's the newspaper hawks that you hear on the on the movies, extra, read all about it, and Rangers win the cup. And it dawned on me right there and then that, you know, wow, the Canucks had lost. We got to the hotel, we grabbed our stuff, we raced to the airport, and we got on a flight, transferred to Toronto. I remember getting in the Toronto Air Canada flight, the TV comes on, and it's the first time that I see what I'd been reporting on all night on the riot coverage. I had not even seen footage of it from where I was sitting in New York.
That was Vancouver sports radio pioneer Dan Russell talking about his years as the host of Sports Talk. Every week, we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to a deserving person or organization that has made a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to the team of Canadian and American scientists and Aboriginals and the Center of Whale Research, who came together and used salmon and medication to keep the orca whale known as J50 or Scarlet alive. J50 still needs our thoughts and prayers. She is not out of danger. There are only 75 orcas left in the endangered southern resident population. Nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send us an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Well, that's it for the Breaker.News podcast for August 26th, 2018. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on August 26th in 1971, Bobby Orr became the first million-dollar man in the National Hockey League when he signed a 5-year contract with the Boston Bruins after scoring a record 139 points the previous season? Well, now you know. Send me your feedback, send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit TheBreaker.News on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. Thank you to some of our supporters like Quan Lee, Randy Sogstad, James Plett, Spruce Hill Contracting, Daryl Greer, Barbara May, Elvio Chies, John Kennedy, and Dave in Burnaby. For more information, to support TheBreaker.News, go to patreon.com/TheBreakerNews, patreon.com/TheBreakerNews. And as we end tonight, playing in the Breaker.News podcast band this week is Sports Talk's Dan Russell. Have a pleasant good week.